And this is the thing that happens when you change and others stay the same. Right? It's very difficult for them and they can make it difficult for you. And it tests your resolve. And I remember in frustration, he says to me, "You've got this new thing of saying no. I'm getting very irritated about it and I would like you to stop."
Yeah. What a bully.
He was. And so I had to say to him, "But you see, the more I say yes, I end up being the one who has to work till 2 a.m.
Hello and welcome to The Change Exchange, where we talk about the change moments in life, how we make it happen and how we deal with it when life makes it happen. In this podcast series, we meet South Africans who are now stepping into leading roles while coming from homes where their parents did not have the opportunity to fulfill their potential through study or otherwise. And in one generation, they are changing their own and often their family's environment completely. How do they do it? If we understand the process, we can learn from it. I am your host, Ruda Landman. I am joined at the microphone by Dr. Frank Makwekwe, who teaches financial wellness and personal empowerment at Gibbs in Johannesburg, and one of his main areas of research is the science of change. Frank, I've just said if we understand the process, we can learn from it. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Did you see the smile
on my face when you say that? Because I think we're a good student who now knows of the formula. And really, when we listen to the stories that our wonderful guests share with us, one is able to connect the dots and really be able to see that formula for change in action. Maybe you want to remind our listeners of that formula.
He's trying to see if I remember. It's a wonderful little cute formula. D times V times F must be greater than R. So dissatisfaction with where you are, your present circumstances, times the vision that you can see for a possible different future, times the first steps, the baby steps, as
Absolutely.
Frank always describes it. All of that together must be bigger than resistance, but it's times, it's a multiplication. So none of them can be zero, because zero times anything
yes.
is zero.
Ah, wonderful. A plus.
So the third voice that the listeners have already heard a little bit, our guest today, one of Frank's colleagues at Gibbs, Dr. Dotson Tletjana, grew up in Ennerdale, south of Johannesburg, did a master's at Wits and a doctorate at Columbia University in New York, and her field is change management, talent management also, organizational development. You had enough change to manage in one lifetime, Dots. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. A grandmother who decided she was not going to stay in the box in which apartheid put her, and she found someone in home affairs who would change the family's surname to Andrews so that they could become colored instead of black.
Wow.
And the two boys out of five children, two boys, three girls, the two boys accepted it and moved with the grandmother to Ennerdale, which is a colored township, and or was then. The three girls chose to remain black, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
And it has made all the difference. So you landed in a completely different culture at the age of six.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? What was the experience like?
Yes, I remember bits and pieces of it quite vividly. Brand new house. And we had moved from Cladi, where we had lived in a one-car garage.
The whole family lived
in a one-car garage. And I remember going into the house, which was big and new and fresh, and then noticing that there was a toilet and a bath in the house. This was in 1979. And I was shocked. And I needed to go to the loo. And I asked my mom, am I allowed to use this loo that is in the house? And is this really our house? So that's my enduring memory of of that first
and
day.
And your acceptance in the community? Mm. How did people respond to this new family?
So it's interesting because we had a job to do, and our job was to convince other people that we were colored. Now, when you look at me, you can see that I'm black, right? And my sisters are too, my parents are too, but we had to convince our neighbors that we were colored. And the first way to do that was to demonstrate that we could speak Afrikaans, which we really couldn't. My dad could speak Tsotsitaal, and my mom's hearing was impaired, so we only used sign language with her. I don't remember it being traumatic, and I really credit my friends, who are still my friends to this day, for welcoming me. And it was children being children, and that is how we learned to speak Sotho. I remember, though, my little sister embarrassed me severely when she would speak Sesotho in front of my friends. And that was the rule. You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to. But she was little. And, you know, I was six. She was three. And so she did what a three-year-old does. And that's how we adjusted.
Frank, is there something there of a small brain, small child, who already understands that I can change, I can adapt, I can fit in?
You know, humans have evolved and we've got kind of this survival instinct. So for me, that's actually what's coming up for me, Ruda.
You have to fit into the tribe.
Yeah, that because the child must survive, they quickly pick up what it is that they need to do. And in fact, just listen to what Dotse said now. The three-year-old was being a three-year-old. She wasn't fearful. I don't know what they're saying about this funny language. I'm going to talk my language. Yeah. I'm going to speak my language. Yeah, yeah.
Your dad was what you described on the phone to me as a mean drunk. Mm. And your mum was profoundly deaf.
Yes.
And yet she was a gregarious, outgoing person.
Yes.
There's also something about a role model, something about seeing that your mother, in spite of her husband beating her up and being mean to her and whatever, she manages to overcome that, to live beyond that.
Yeah. So both my parents are deceased now. And so I often tell the story without honoring them. So I want to make sure that I do today and to just say, hey, guys, must be resting in peace. So, yes, my father was many things. And he was very conservative. He was very righteous about many things. But the other thing about him was that on the occasions when he was drinking alcoholically, he would be very mean, which was a complete difference to who he was when he was sober. And so,
yes, that's difficult for a child, huh? You never know what you're going to get.
Enormously, enormously. And it is as a consequence of that, not knowing which dad I'm going to be dealing with, that all of us children learned to walk on eggshells around him. And I learned very quickly that I needed to be good. I needed to be excellent. I had to be smart. I just had to do what I know dad likes. And then at least I wouldn't be the reason why there might be chaos and violence later. And that's where my anxiety comes from. So my mom, I didn't know for a long time that she was a person living with disability because she didn't live like that. This woman would go into downtown Johannesburg in the 80s, in the 90s, when that textile industry was starting to fail. And she would go and knock on factory doors and say, I need a job. And she would almost always come back with a job.
Frank, the role of role models, of the mum, then also your older sister who went and studied and ended up doing law in Scotland. That example?
This is not a woman who's kind of saying to the kids, I'm disabled, I'm this and that. She's going downtown, she's making things happening, she's kind of, you know, getting a job. But what's also interesting is the father who's very different when he is drunk and when he is sober. So I'm very interested in understanding from Dot whether she identified the good dad, the good side as a role model, and then almost trying to make sense of this other side. And the reason I'm saying that, because I also have a little bit of that background where my father was also alcoholic and he was two-sided.
Yeah. So my sober dad was quiet, dignified, easily embarrassed, didn't want to bring shame, didn't want anyone to do that, was Catholic, was observant, was generous, was kind, was soft-hearted. And I did have that dad on and off over the years.
So what comes to mind for me to just build on Ruda's question. So when you were drunk and mean,
yeah,
did you wish for your normal, sober, kind dad?
Of course.
Dad, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, I could tell the clock by my sober dad. I knew he had worked at a law firm downtown. And I knew that he would finish work at 4:30. He would go to Brienzauer and take a bus back to Innerdale at 5. And the bus would arrive at our street at 5:50. And he would be in the house by 6. The sober dad did that without fail. Drunk dad doesn't come in at 6. He's not there by 7:30. Comes in whatever time.
Yeah.
Until one day, at 2 a.m., he's still not home, only to find that our neighbor had received a call from him and my dad letting him know that he'd been severely assaulted in town. So I can literally point to the day and the time when I lost my peace and when anxiety came.
Yeah.
Wow. That day, and it has never left.
Sure.
Yeah. So it... To be raised by an alcoholic changes you. To live with an alcoholic changes you. And it is particularly difficult for children.
Of course.
Mm. It's difficult for everybody, but I think it does a particular number on children.
People don't spend a lot of time thinking about financial services. They simply think about the money they need to do things and the things they need to do with money. That's why at BrightRock, we don't think of ourselves as a financial services provider. Rather, we're a money company. In fact, we're the needs-matched money company. Everything we do is about meeting people's changing needs. That's why we created the first ever needs-matched life insurance that changes as your life changes. And because we want to meet people's changing needs throughout their lives, we set out to learn everything and share everything there is to know about change. We call it Change Science, and you can learn all about it at the Change Exchange, a free resource that's filled with tips, tools, and inspiring stories to help you navigate change in your life. You can find more on changeexchange.co.za or on your preferred podcast platform. Just search for Change Exchange. Made just for you by BrightRock, the first ever needs-matched life insurance that changes as your life changes. Welcome back to Change in One Generation, where our guest is Gibbs academic Dr. Dot Sintletyana. The next chapter in your story, Frank, it fits so precisely with our cool little formula.
Yeah, that's the one I know from talking to Dot and Gibbs.
Because, yes. Because you said you hated your circumstances in the township, yes. So severe dissatisfaction.
Yeah. Yes.
You wanted to get away from the violence inside and outside of your home.
Yeah.
And you knew education was the only way out. So there was a vision.
Absolutely.
And there was a way, there were first steps that she could take. Huh?
And from previous guests, the part of education, even if you think Isaiah last week, the idea of when I know that education is kind of the bridge for me to a better life, that first step is just the child saying, I'm going to commit to study hard. I'm going to commit to do more on education, even if it's at the expense of not spending enough time with other children on the streets, right? So that first step is, it's so fascinating because it's so internal to a young person. And for me, it kind of requires discipline. It requires, of course, the vision that we spoke about to say, the only way I can get out of here is education. I'm going to do it.
Did you also have to accept that you would be slightly different? Because I don't think all the girls in your class were studying very hard every day.
Yes, I had to accept that. And my friends remind me of that. I, by the way, found school very hard. I was not a quick learner. It wasn't easy. I had to spend lots of hours on it.
And then when you went to WITS, you had to go the opposite way. You had to learn Sotho and Zulu again, because now you were surrounded by students who expected a black person to speak a black language.
Yes.
And so once again, you just had to had to knuckle down and do it.
It was very painful, Ruda, because on the one hand, we took on this fake identity of being colored, and it was obviously for very instrumental purposes. But it was my sister, in fact, who held the fort, who would always remind me, you're not colored. So sometimes I would style my hair and I would try to make a fringe, which I had to work very hard at. You see how your hair just naturally falls like that? Now, I had to take a scarf or pantyhose and wrap it around my head to make that fringe. And I would be so proud to show my sister this, and she would say, go change your hair, you're not colored. So I constantly had that.
What was that about? Wow. Identity?
It was about identity, and she was holding firm to, we are here temporarily. We are here for an instrumental purpose. It's to get a better education, to have better opportunities. But we are very black.
So when you went to WITS, did you step into that? Did you announce yourself as a black person?
I didn't have to, because my peers saw me as black. They expected me to be black. They wouldn't have known different until I opened my mouth. And they would hear my accent, that I sounded colored. And so what they would do is speak to me, particularly guys, because I, don't mind saying, was quite attractive. I've been told. And so guys would approach me in Sotho, in Zulu, and I would be flustered because I can't respond. And so I expect people, and I expect to say, hey, no, I don't understand. Won't you say that in English? But the reaction I got was unexpected, and it was painful. And it was, what kind of a person are you who doesn't know how to speak Sotho? You are ashamed of your own language. You are imagining yourself to be better. You are a coconut.
Frank, if you knew Afrikaans, jy verbeel jou.
Jy verbeel jou.
The direct translation is imagine, but the Afrikaans means you're putting on airs.
Okay.
It's, wow.
And so that was a vicious assault.
Yes. Can you imagine?
On someone who hadn't thought about that.
And you were not prepared for it.
And I was unprepared for it. And so that dissatisfaction, Frank, and I thought that, but I want these guys to be my friends. I want to know what is being said. And so I then made the decision to take on an additional course at WITS in my first year, a Zulu 1B course. And it was conversational Zulu. I was the only black person in the class with a Zulu native speaker who was unimpressed with me. She was also, she knew I didn't belong, and she treated me like that. I ignored that, and I focused on her lessons and her instructions.
And what you had a very clear
vision.
Goal.
Yes.
A vision and a goal.
Yes.
And this was once again, as you as you've said about being coloured, yeah, in inverted commas, it was a means to an end. And you focused on that and you just did it.
I just did
Brilliant.
It.
Brilliant.
And today I can conversationally engage in Sotho, in Zulu and in Xhosa. But the limitation is that my vocabulary is not as extensive as a native speaker, and I don't always get the grammar right, and native speakers can hear my accent isn't quite right. But I don't care, because, gosh, can I talk to anybody? Yes, I can.
I want to fast forward.
Wow.
You applied for a Fulbright scholarship after your master's degree,
yes,
which is a thing in itself. What made you do that, and what was that experience like?
Oh, so I've been very blessed in my life that I have, on my journey, encountered people who took a genuine interest in me and who thought I was fabulous. Growing up in my house, I didn't know that I was fabulous. Nobody told me that I was fabulous. And then when I get to Wits and I get to master's level, first I meet Cynthia Cross, a historian. Then Sue Krijo is also a historian, and they take me under their wing and I become their TA, their teaching assistant. But my life changes when I get to master's.
Let us pause there. Do you see what just happened, Ruda? We saw it with the previous guest. Gratitude. People who have had other people who help them put kind of your first step, you know, on the ladder, first foot on the ladder. Do you see how they easily recall names? And they are grateful as they speak. And gratitude is one of those engines for change and resilience, because it just helps you to know that there are good things that can happen to me. There are good people out there. So it's so fascinating for me to see it. Another guest just rattling names of people who have touched their lives. Yeah, I just had to say that.
So I was not the smartest one in the class ever. And I told you that I struggled. And even at Wits, I had to struggle. I spent every waking minute in the library. I had been so poorly prepared in colored education, which was way better than Bantu education, which is a version of it. I would mainly just pass. I would just get 50%, 52%, 54% would be the highest mark I would get for three consecutive years. It started to change when I started to focus exclusively on education and adult education. And I just blossomed. I found my thing. All of a sudden, I was excellent. So much so.
Sorry, Dots, can I just ask there? After 3 years of 50 and 52 and 54, why did you not just leave and go find a job?
Exactly. That was my question.
No, because I was in the academic support program that Wits had at the time, and I understood that I didn't have the skills, and they were teaching me the skills, and I could change this. I could get better if I stuck with it and I stayed the course. Plus, I had never started something that I didn't finish. It cost a lot of money. That first year, 5,000 rand in fees was hectic for my father to raise.
Wow.
I was not going to waste that. And in the second and third year, I think I got then bursaries. And so, no, giving up was not an option.
And you see mindset, which you often say, critical for change, right? What is a mindset? Set of beliefs, attitude, knowledge we have taught something. So I'm not going to give up, number one. Cost my father a lot of money, the 5,000. And also, I know I can improve. So that mindset alone helps Dots navigate the change. From the 50s, I'm not doing well, to this,
yeah,
I found my spot.
Yeah. So on a 65% master's, I get to meet two other angels, the now late Gwyneth Tuchten and Jane Castle in the adult education department. And they think I'm something fabulous. And they take me under their wing.
For the first time, there's someone who thinks you're fabulous,
yes,
and tells you perhaps.
Yes, yes. And I remember my first meeting with Gwyneth Tuchtung. She was my supervisor for my master's research. And I said to her, Gwyneth, I want to get a distinction in this degree. Can you help me do it?
Exactly.
Can you help me? And she says, well, let's try. And so she is rigorous. I'm organized. I'm structured. I'm doing what she's asking me to do. I produce work. She comes with her red pen and back and forth is feedback. And so at the end of that year, I passed the master's in adult education. And they are the two who then say, right, you have to go to Columbia University in New York and you must go work with Victoria Marsick.
So what did you, I mean, here's a kid from Innerdale and someone is saying, go to New York to study. What
crazy.
Was your response? Yes.
Are you mad?
Yeah.
Are you mad?
So how did you get over that bridge?
What is Columbia University? Where is New York on the map?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was probable because I was ambitious. So you don't start something that you don't finish. And you go and achieve the best you can in anything.
Right.
So I had a bachelor's, I had an honors, I had a master's. There's one more degree I must have.
Yeah.
It's a doctorate. And so they introduce this, but go further, they connect me with financial aid. And financial aid says, here's an application form. And one of these application forms is for Fulbright. Of course, when I'm doing this, I know I'm not going to get it. Because I'm competing with other children and there are children who are better resourced and were smarter and who had a better track record than 50-50-50-50 for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then these women are just like, go off, do it. You can help me prepare and get there. It's an interview around a big oak type boardroom table, seven people or so. And I leave the interview, my now husband comes to get me and I just burst out crying. I was awful. I was awful. I messed that up. That is my memory of it.
Of the event, yeah.
And then it took a long time for them to let us know the results. And then the news comes that I had got the scholarship.
Goodness.
And I was shocked. I was as shocked then, as shocked as I was when I got my matric results and I learned that I had gotten my matric with an exemption.
An exemption.
Yeah.
It really surprised me because thinking about it now, I'd been living with this idea of not being good enough,
And no one was telling you in your family as you grew up.
No. And so lots of people talk about the imposter syndrome and how it keeps showing up.
Then at a crucial moment, there was what you always refer to as social support.
Yeah.
From both from people on a personal level and structurally through the bursary program, et cetera, and that made all the difference.
Absolutely. And often we say on the program that sometimes when people think about change, they don't tap enough into social support because they are thinking, I must do it alone.
Yeah.
But that power of social support, asking for help, being vulnerable and being prepared to ask, accepting other people helping, it really makes the change journey less lonely. You're not alone. There's other people believing and assisting you in that change journey.
We created the Change Exchange because at Bright Rock, we love change. And we wanted to know and share everything there is to know about change and how it impacts our lives. We call it Change Science. Change Science shows that everyone can get better at navigating change and that in all moments of change, there's always opportunity. To learn more about Change Science, visit the Change Exchange, our free resource that's filled with tips, tools, and inspiring stories to help you navigate change in your life. just like the stories in this podcast. You can find many more on changeexchange.co.za or on your preferred podcast platform. Just search for Change Exchange. Made just for you by BrightRock, the first ever needs-matched life insurance that changes as your life changes.
Welcome back to Change in One Generation, where our guest is Gibbs academic Dr. Dots Ndletyana. The next chapter that I want us to really explore, you went to Columbia, you were successful, you got the doctorate, and then you came back and your life just fell apart. Mm-hmm. Your brother had got into drugs, your mum found him having committed suicide.
Goodness.
Your dad started drinking again, and 8 weeks later, he was dead. Your mum was almost immediately, or in the same period,
3 months later,
diagnosed with dementia, and 11 months later, she was dead.
Yes.
So within less than a year, half your family had just vanished.
Yes. Yes.
And you became suicidal.
Yes.
But then, fortunately, and I'm concertinaing it, the story, fortunately, your sister heard you say something and she just booked you into a psychiatric hospital, and that made all the difference.
3 hours later, I was in the hospital because I'd been saying my goodbyes and she heard it as a goodbye.
Yeah.
And she figured out what I meant and said, give me your phone. What's your psychologist's name? Got Jenny's name. Was booked into Akiso in Parktown. Spent 3.5 weeks there. Very shocking to drive into a place that says at the top, psychiatric clinic.
And shocking in what sense? What's wrong with me?
Because it's like, okay, something's really wrong with me. This
right.
is the depth. So something's really wrong with me.
Yeah.
Something about me is not right, that I have sunk to these depths.
But then while you were there, you said, I chose to live. I decided that I want to live.
Yes.
Tell us about that decision and what gave rise to it and how did it play out?
We work in groups. We work in a bigger circle. We work individually with a psychologist for a few minutes every day. We work with a psychiatrist every other day. For me, what it represented was the first time I was not responsible to anybody or for anybody. I could just be here and be fully selfish. And I saw that as embarrassing as it must be for others, that, oh my gosh, you're in a psychiatric clinic. But for me, it was a gift. And plus the medical aid pays for every day. What am I doing through these 3 weeks? I'm rediscovering who I am. I'm rediscovering what I want. And I am discovering that actually I love being alive. I love being alive and I want to be alive. And I find my joy and I reflect on my values and I discover all the ways in which my life isn't quite what I want it to be. I'm working too much. I'm saying yes to people at work who don't really care about me. I'm sacrificing myself, my time, my mind, my effort, my talents, doing a job that's not meaningful to me anymore, that if anything exactly dials up my anxiety and that often leaves me unfulfilled, dissatisfied, not good enough. So what am I doing? Trying to please people and an organization that is trying to do this to me or that is doing that to me.
Frank, please help unpack.
There is so much in there. So the first thing that I want to check with Dots is this. So you have a doctorate.
Yes.
But you end up at Akiso.
Yes.
Mentally, did that bother you? That, I mean, I have this highest level of academic achievement. We often hear less than 2% of the global population ever gets a PhD. And now we've sunk this low.
Yeah.
How did you process that change?
I had never been unafraid to get help.
Right.
So this was just, You're depressed. You want to, as the young people say, unalive yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, you're sick. Oh, you have a mental, a chemical imbalance. Take some meds, have some talk therapy, have some physical exercise. Get taken out of what is stressful. Come into a holding space for 3 weeks. So I understood what I stood to gain. I was not coping in the outside world, and I needed rescuing.
But I also hear the little girl of six who was willing to do whatever it takes to find her feet, find her feet in a new environment. Yeah. The young woman at Wits, yeah, who said, you were not scared of looking silly.
Yes.
So once again now, okay, no matter what it looks like to the outside world, I need this.
Yeah.
And there is an answer, so I'm going to go for that answer.
And the big thing standing out for me there, you know, when we talk of resilience, the capacity to overcome trauma, failure, tragedy, mistakes, you know, financial problems, health problems, that's what we call resilience. And one of the key foundations of resilience is this big word we like in academia, mental agility. But effectively, what it's really talking about is what's coming through here. It's I get into a space, I'm able to have perspective around what's actually going on here. And I look at both sides. I'm here because this is what led me here. But at the same time, if I use what I have here, this is what I stand to gain, right? So it's almost looking at two sides of the equation and coming up with, it's positive being here. And so I fully mess myself with what's going on. That's one. Then you also sense optimism. I like being alive. I'm finding my values, my identity. Who am I? And what is optimism? Optimism is just that sense of things might be tough now, but you know, in time, good things happen to people. So you also see that.
It can be different. It can be better.
Yes. And the third one I see, and we often miss that, Ruda, when we talk about resilience, is that earlier instances of facing obstacles, of facing difficulties, they actually do prepare us. They make us more resilient. So think of the six-year-old. You Afrikaans now. Speak the language. Get to vets. Look at all those challenges that daughter has explained. And not passing well. Off to Colombia. That was a big change. So all those instances, she might not have processed it like that. But that actually tells us that this is a person with high levels of resilience. So now they are down because of the challenges that got them to Akiso, but that mental agility, that prior trauma and challenges, and that optimism, boom, they prepare them to process and say, I'm going to get out of here stronger. There's a reason why I'm here. That's kind of how I'm seeing it.
And how did you make the decision for going forward in your life? For change, you decided to resign, to change your job. How did you decide where you wanted to be?
So it took some time. I had to go back to my workplace. I started saying no to my boss. He didn't understand what had happened to me because he had not heard those words. And he was very irritated. And this is the thing that happens when you change and others stay the same.
Right?
It's very difficult for them and they can make it difficult for you. And it tests your resolve. And I remember in frustration, he says to me, you've got this new thing of saying no. I'm getting very irritated about it and I would like you to stop.
Yeah. What a bully.
He was. Yeah. And so I had to say to him, but you see, the more I say yes, I end up being the one who has to work till 2 a.m. Oh, the other thing I started doing was to say, I could do it, but we need to renegotiate the deadline. Or I would say, who else can help me? Most people don't like hearing no. My son's very cute. When he was younger, I would say to him, Sabata, please wash the dishes. And he'd say to me, Mom, oh, thank you so much for the offer, but no. So I was practicing the but no.
Yes.
And that is very awful to be the recipient of that.
And you know, Dos, one of your favorite things you say at Gibbs,
mm-hmm,
we need our listeners to hear this. Dots is very firm on boundaries.
Yes.
So the no that she's talking about, the yes, but those are types of boundaries. Boundaries protect us from high levels of stress. Boundaries help us build resilience because we know who we are and we don't want to take too much stuff because we will either disappoint ourselves or others.
I'm not the Buddha, I'm not whatever, because I still fall in that trap where I really want you to like me. And so I will say yes to you when I really mean no, and I will suffer for it. And those were the lessons that I learned during those 3 weeks. And so I have absolutely no shame about having spent 3 weeks in a psychiatric clinic, being seen by a psychologist, being seen by a psychiatrist. And in my case, my psychologist and psychiatrist worked together as a triad with me. Prof. Tom, and I will name her, she saved my life because she understood that it was my anxiety that was leading to my depression, which was making me suicidal. And so got me on the right meds. And those meds changed my life. I had not known since I was that 10, 11-year-old girl whose dad was assaulted that night and I lost my peace. Since that day, I had not had the experience of being at ease.
I'm always anxious.
And so the meds that I take in the morning and in the evening work on creating the chemical balance in my brain. These medicines are there to support me. I cannot, Ruda, show up the way I am showing up today if I decide I'm not going to take them. So I have no stigma about it. I have to take them at night. I take them every day. And I have to emphasize that story because mental health is very important. And I meet too many people who will not take the support that is available because it's a stigma. That you are taking the meds is a sign of weakness. I take these meds just like I took the meds and had the operation when I broke my ankle. Why should mental illness and treatment for mental illness be stigmatized and we pretend like it is for people who are weak? I am anything but.
And what a gift, Ruda, that Dots has given to our listeners to destigmatize, to unpack what mental health is. And in that way, I must thank those for being vulnerable and for being an evangelist for mental health, because often it's so misunderstood. People don't take time to understand what triggers it in me. And you hear those talking a lot about that is the day where anxiety kicks in, right? What is anxiety? Anxiety, Ruda, is constantly scanning the environment for danger. There's something that can happen to me. I can't quite touch and feel it, but you're constantly scanning it and you can see the impact it can have on an individual.
But you've come out the other side and you are so resilient, and I can just see that you will be an amazing support for your students going from here on.
And it's also about the journey. I really don't want the listeners to feel like, okay, she's figured it all out and she's perfect. It's a journey. I have to see my psychologist on a regular basis. I have to exercise. I have to eat well. I have to sleep early. I have to sleep enough. I have to rest. I have to do all these things to be able to continue to show up like this. And despite doing all of those things, oftentimes it still gets too much and it's very hard. But I have not since reached those depths that make seem ending it attractive or the only option. And that has been the beauty of all those strategies that I've used to work with my mental health.
But what I'm also hearing is clarity and honesty.
Yes.
That this is, people often say that if you can give it a name, you're halfway home.
Yes.
Yes.
You need to understand what you are suffering from before you can find the right meds, both physically and in metaphorically.
Yes.
So we need to bring this to an end. Thank you so much. Wow. Thank you as always, Frank.
Yeah, and I think for me to just finish, I mean, you're asking what's coming up for me. I think we've talked about the theme of resilience, but more importantly for me, Ruda, it's, and Steve Covey says it quite well, where he talks about in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, that one of the first steps to change in our lives, and he uses this expression, is to brutally accept the current reality. This is kind of where I am. It doesn't scare me. I'm going to work with it on my change journey. And that's, for me, the big takeaway from Dot's story.
Dr. Dots and Lidiana, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the program and sharing it all with us. And as Frank says, being vulnerable. And thank you for helping us unpack it so that we can learn from it.
Lovely story.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy to be in conversation with you both.
Thank you again to the listeners, as always, and do join us again for another episode of Change in One Generation. Until next time.